You know, we live in a world that loves individualism. What is individualism? Individualism is that philosophy that prioritizes the individual first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And you're likely very familiar with some of the individualism's key themes: personal freedom,
yep,
autonomy,
yep,
self-expression,
yeah,
and my favorite, carving your own path.
And let's be honest, some of these things sound really enticing.
Yeah, I like it.
Right? Robert and I are both entrepreneurs. And because of that, we have several businesses and we do cherish that sense of independence that we can carve our own path.
Yeah.
And I've always been that way. I'm pretty sure my first sentence as a toddler was, "I'll do it myself."
That sounds about right.
I mean, I think I probably still say that occasionally.
Yeah, without a doubt. Right? Yeah.
So individualism is attractive. It's compelling. It's sexy. And it promises us control over our own lives and a chance to, quote, live your truth.
But today we're asking a big question. Have we taken this individualism too far? In our pursuit of personal freedom, have we overlooked something maybe a bit deeper? Mm-hmm. There's another philosophy we'd like you to consider. It's called relationism, mm-hmm, and it tells us that we're wired for connection. We don't exist in a vacuum. Our brains, our bodies, and our very beings are designed to connect,
yeah,
to lean on one another, and to share life's highs and lows.
They sure are. And today, we are diving into something that I think personally is honestly pretty mind-blowing about how your brain works within the context of your relationship. And we're going to be unpacking the science that shows we're not designed to go at it all alone in this world. Okay. Our brains are social organs. They're designed to share emotions and to share neurological loads with other people, with other brains. We need connection. And when we get it, our relationships become this incredible source of strength.
Absolutely. So why does all of this matter? Because words like co-regulation aren't just these nice little sciencey terms. It's how you and your partner create safety and connection. So stay tuned. That's what's up next on Master Your Marriage.
Did you know the average couple waits 6 years to get help in their marriage?
Yeah, that's 6 years of pain, hurt, and frustration.
Hi there, I'm Charlotte Snow.
And I'm Robert Snow.
And welcome to Master Your Marriage,
where we believe that having an amazing marriage should never feel like hard work and shouldn't be a guessing game.
This is the show for married couples who want to discover a scientifically proven approach to building a masterful marriage and have fun while doing it.
So if that's you, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
So I'm really excited about this episode. I'm loving it already. It's inspired by a conversation that I had this last week with one of my clients, mm-hmm, and we're going to share their story at the end of the episode. So hang on for that because it's a really cool story that you're going to love. So I'm excited to dig into this with you
today.
I know
we've been talking about it almost all week as we were preparing for the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. All right. So today we're going to challenge some of the cultural norms in the Western world. And I want you to think about these slogans as I sort of just announce them, right? So first one would be, you know, live your truth.
Oh, I've heard that.
Yeah. Or he had a chart your own path. Or my favorite one, I'm finally choosing me.
I'm choosing me.
Who do we hear that I'm choosing me from?
Yeah, we hear that, don't we?
Yeah.
So these themes and others that are like them, we hear them everywhere. And we're really prevalent in our culture. And for a long time, I was part of that boss babe movement.
Oh, yeah. Got a hat downstairs.
I do have a hat that says boss babe on it. And I just cringe a little bit. I haven't worn it in a few years. But, you know, back in the day, I was coaching female entrepreneurs.
Yep.
Who were building these successful businesses, a lot of online businesses, and I coached them privately. I also spoke on big stages in front of large audiences. And at first, I loved the work. These were women that were doing amazing things in the world to improve their family's future.
Yeah, they were changing a lot.
They're changing lives and doing a lot of really cool things. And I loved that part of it. But then I started to see some trends that didn't sit right with me. I saw a lot of the women sort of minimizing their husbands.
Yeah.
Minimizing their efforts in the home, kind of putting them down a little bit. And a lot of them even left their marriages because honestly, they were no longer tied to the money from their relationships. They didn't need them anymore. And they kind of sought to chart their own path outside their relationship.
Choose me.
and choose me. Yeah. And I saw it break up a lot of families.
Yeah. And that's why we wanted to move more into couples coaching and relationship coaching.
Exactly what inspired us to move into couples coaching.
Absolutely. Today, we're not telling you that all of individual is bad. We're just inviting you to think and maybe decide for yourself.
Yeah.
So today we're going to share some research on interpersonal neurobiology, which is the science of how our brains are wired for connection. Then you can choose how to use this information in your own life and in your own relationship.
Perfect. Okay. So let's talk about the science.
Okay.
Our science shows that our mind exists in a social setting, in a social context. So that means that partners are impacting each other all the time in many different ways. We balance each other's stress hormones.
Oh, absolutely.
Like cortisol. We help to balance that. We calm each other's nervous systems when we're stressed. We even boost each other's immune systems. Well, that is in safe, secure relationships we do.
Yeah, that's a caveat.
And in safe, secure relationships, we also see less disease. We have less depression and anxiety. We feel better overall. But then the opposite is also true. And if you're in an unhappy, insecure relationship, that relationship can make you sick.
Yeah. And so why does this happen? Well, it starts in the womb. Our nervous system forms its first initial connection with the mother. Right? That's where it all begins. And then after birth, our nervous system then continues to develop with other adults, usually the parents first, and then, you know, kids and aunts and uncles. And if you're a parent, you know this, your kids need you to soothe them. They need you to comfort them. They need you to reassure them. And this helps them manage their emotions and their stress. It also helps them build robust and resilient nervous systems.
For themselves, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're a parent, you have definitely seen this before. If your child, which I'm sure they have, if they've ever gotten sick, if they've ever gotten hurt, they've ever skinned their knee or fallen off their bike, what ends up happening? They look to you as the parent to know, oh, how do I feel in this moment? Am I okay? Yeah. And by giving them that comfort, that reassurance, you're letting them know, hey, baby, this pain's not going to last forever. We're going to be okay. We're going to get through this together. And all mammals, especially humans, have this, that we're built for this co-regulation. And there's a term for it that I love. And researchers call parents neuroarchitects.
Neuroarchitects.
Isn't that a cool word?
Yeah,
neuroarchitects. What you think about it, what an architect is, it's designing a building, it's designing a structure. But you add neuro onto the front of it, and it shows that parents are designing their children's nervous systems. We shape the wiring of our children's brains and their nervous systems. How cool is that?
That's amazing. It's amazing. You've heard us mention a researcher by the name of Ed Tronick before. So what I want you to do is maybe search him on YouTube for his still face experiments. And I'd recommend watching one or all of them. It's quite interesting. And in one of his videos, a mother plays with her 18-month-old son, and he's sort of holding this toy dinosaur, and she pretends to eat the food that the dinosaur feeds her, and the mom and the baby are like, they're clearly in sync.
They're having fun, and they're playing.
And suddenly the mom turns away, and then she comes back. That's why it's called the still face, right? She comes back, and she just takes all the emotion away from her face. Nothing. She's not mad. She's not happy. She's just empty. And then for two long minutes, you can watch the disconnection. So first the mom and her child were in sync, and then you can watch this disconnection just begin to deteriorate. And the child is trying everything. He's playing with the dinosaur. He's trying to feed mom, and he's trying to engage her, and nothing works. And then he yells, and then he screams, and then he, you know, arches his back, and he starts drooling and crying. And eventually he just starts banging his head against his mom. Like after only 2 minutes of this disconnection, and he's desperate to get this connection back with his mom.
To sync back up.
Yeah.
And that's why Edtronic calls it synchronicity, to sync back up.
Yeah.
And so what you see in that video is this break of that synchronicity. And when we're in sync with another person, when we're in connection, there's something biological that happens in our body. As an adult, as a child, as an infant, it doesn't matter. Something biological has happened. And so in those videos, the child is being flooded with oxytocin and other chemicals, feel-good chemicals that the body creates. And these chemicals secure the attachment between the mother and the child. And what's interesting is that that co-regulation that's happening usually from mother to child isn't necessarily a one-way street. It doesn't have to be from parent to child. Sometimes the reverse of that is also true. Sometimes that co-regulation goes the other direction where the child is actually helping to soothe the parent.
Well, and we've seen that when parents are crying and so you'll hear, "Mommy, why are you crying?" And they want to come and try to soothe you.
They do.
And it's so cute that you can't help but be affected by it.
Right. And I would say even without them knowing and trying to make an attempt to come and soothe you, I remember times when our babies were little and you have a little bit of postpartum, maybe depression, sadness, and a lot of changes that are going on in your hormones and feeling overwhelmed and feeling frazzled. And I remember sometimes just rocking my baby, holding my baby, nursing my baby. And I remember how it would calm me. Mm-hmm. And help me to feel not so frazzled.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's definitely not just a one-way street.
That's the beauty of this. It's the co-regulation that we're going to keep talking about. So do you remember that story about the babies in the orphanages? Like we've heard these stories about how the babies have died because they didn't have this emotional connection. Like, and they weren't even neglected. They just weren't connected.
Yeah. So this was back in the 1950s, and a psychiatrist by the name of Rene Spitz, he studied orphanages with high infant death rates, and they couldn't figure out why these babies were dying. They were fed. They were changed properly. They were bathed properly. They were burped properly. And so for all intents and purposes, they were physically nourished.
Yeah. Everything was fine. Physically, they were fine.
Physical needs were getting met. Yeah. But they got no emotional connection. They weren't emotionally nourished. No one spoke to them. No one played with them. They didn't get that emotional synchronicity. They weren't in sync with someone. And so they died.
Yeah.
Essentially,
and they were too young to interact with each other at that point as well.
They were, and essentially they died of loneliness.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dr. Dan Siegel says it best. The brain is a social organ. Mm-hmm. Our relationships aren't really a luxury the way we might think they are. They are a nutrient we need to survive. So think about that. Yes, you are an individual and that can happen, but your need for connection can be life or death. Your existence, your very existence, oftentimes depends on connecting and belonging.
Yes, it does. At least in the case of those infants in the orphanage, their life depended on it in many cases.
Yeah, I don't think we can go through life without connection. I mean, I think that we like to think we can, and I think we're always going to be drawn back to that.
Right, because I'm going to chart my course, right? I am a strong individual, but are we really? Are we? So, yeah, you know, we have the ability to self-regulate ourselves, of course. And we talk a lot about self-regulation and breathing and bringing your mature self back online and using these strategies to self-regulate. And yes, we can do that, but maybe we weren't really meant to.
Right.
Everyone, no matter who you are, will get safety and stability from their relationships. And so, I don't know, you might be thinking right now, okay, that makes sense with babies. That makes sense. But as an adult, do I really need connection the way that a baby needs connection? And I think our culture of individualism that Robert sort of opened us up with today and talking about, I think maybe our culture would say, oh, if you need somebody, that's codependency. Well, let's dive into that a little bit. Let's talk about Anthony Graves. Oh, he has a really interesting story.
Yeah, he was a death row inmate. He was arrested at age 26, wrongfully convicted, and spent 18 years in prison.
Oof.
Interesting is he spent 10 of those years in solitary confinement. And he talks about how solitary confinement is such a cruel act.
Right.
And he said he's seen people come into prison just totally normal. And within 3 years of living in solitary confinement, they just weren't themselves anymore. He said one guy went out on the yard, got naked, urinated on himself, rubbed feces everywhere, really drive themselves just crazy. And he says solitary confinement is brutal. It's far more abusive than just anything that the prison system was designed to do. And it actually shows how just social and individual isolation can just destroy your psyche, can destroy you as a person.
And make you go mad.
And drive you crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think new research, as we look at things that are coming out more and more, it's proving this over and over. our emotions impact one another.
Yeah.
We're meant to be in connection and we impact one another's emotions in profound ways. Our happiness, our suffering, we impact one another's. Our pain impacts one another's. Our nervous system is deeply connected with those who we are closest to, regulating, dysregulating, co-regulating with one another. My nervous system is always in connection. When Robert and I are together, whether we like it or not, our nervous systems are always in communication with each other. They're always talking to each other and communicating without our knowledge, without our conscious awareness.
Yeah. And I was going to say that, and I don't want to get too far off topic, but I mean, the other day I felt like we were just out of sync.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking like just something was off.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to ask yourself the question, was it you drawing away or did I feel the absence in my nervous system?
Right.
Or probably both.
Well, and I think it's hard to even delineate that because you have a nervous system, I have a nervous system, but when we're together, it's almost like something totally new is being created,
yeah.
Like a nervous system of its own.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure that it's a little difficult to even know that, but yeah. You can feel when you're in sync and you can feel when there's a division or a break in that synchronicity.
And I think that's the goal that we want for all of our clients and for the people who listen on the podcast. We want you to feel that synchronicity in mm-hmm. your relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry yeah. for the aside.
No, that was great. And one of the things I talked to one of my clients about today that I'll just add to this is that not only are our nervous systems always in communication, they're always scanning each other. Just like yours yeah. was scanning, again, out of our conscious awareness, out of our thinking knowledge, but it's checking like, am I safe here? Am I safe here? Are we good here? Are we good here? And multiple times every second, our nervous system is asking that question. And the other person is answering.
Okay, let's switch gears for a minute and talk about how the body conserves energy, because I think it has a fascinating connection to the animal kingdom. And in the animal kingdom, we see how predators conserve energy, especially while they're hunting and killing. And it is the law of the land and the wild. And if you have an opportunity to kind of watch this, and you might have seen it on, you know, some of the nature shows where the lion is hunting, let's call it a warthog or something, you'll see the predator and the prey like jump up in a dead sprint. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of it is they're just sort of laying there, like with the tail twitching, right? Not really doing anything, waiting for the moment, not pacing, not running around, just conserving energy. And then they both just blast like out of the starting blocks. One's running and zigging, zagging. The other one's trying to catch up. And it seems to be just this unspoken moment when they both just like, oh, well, this is not getting me anywhere. And then they just stop.
That's so weird.
And they just stop because like, an additional expenditure of energy, especially in that harsh environment, is not going to net, we'll call it the lion in this instance, not going to net him any more food. He's just going to expend more energy than it takes. And the prey at this point sort of knows, he's like, yep, I've run him into the ground. I know he's not going to chase me any farther, he, she, right? Mm-hmm. Usually the lioness, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're not going to chase me any farther because I'm making it not worth their while.
Right.
Yeah,
which is, as you think about that, it makes logical sense because you're out in the desert somewhere where food is scarce.
Resources are scarce.
Resources are limited. And so you have to conserve your energy. And so if you know this pursuit is futile, then you better stop and conserve that energy.
Yeah.
And this brings us to one of our favorite studies from Lane Becks and James Cohen at mm-hmm. the University of Virginia. And it's called the social baseline theory. And the idea is that humans also do the same thing, essentially, that animals do, that humans also conserve energy for doing important tasks. Now, in humans, we're not hunting in the desert generally, right? But we have to use our brain a lot, and the brain consumes a lot of fuel, a lot of energy. And if you've listened to some of our recent episodes, we've talked about the importance of the prefrontal cortex, which is this wise part of us, important part of us that handles big decisions. And it is an energy hog because it's handling all these complex tasks. It takes a lot of energy. And that's why it looks to pass off some of the jobs, we'll call them the habitual jobs or the automatic tasks like breathing, it'll pass those things off to other parts of the brain, mm-hmm. like the brainstem.
Yep.
But here's where it gets wild. The prefrontal cortex also passes off work. And this is, again, the Becks and Cohen's research shows that the prefrontal cortex also offloads work to other people, to other brains.
Wait, what?
Yeah, to other brains.
Okay. How does that work? So to save energy, our brain offloads other tasks
to other people,
to other brains, right? Yeah. Okay. So how is this possible, you might ask? Well, social baseline theory says that our brains operate under the assumption that we have access to a web of social connections, family and friends, and maybe even your spouse. No matter your culture, your age, or where you're from, your brain assumes that you're part of a group that shares these neural tasks and shares this neural safety.
Yeah. So interesting. I think the key word in what you just said is assumes.
Yeah.
Our brain assumes that we have connection. It assumes that we have a web of people that we can depend on, people that we love, people that are close in these intimate relationships that we can share some of these tasks with, like co-regulation. And Becks and Cohen, they actually did a lot of tests, different tests on this. And so they went into it with a different hypothesis than what they came out with. They thought that being in groups of people would actually make the prefrontal cortex work harder, and they were wrong.
Having to sort all of those personalities.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, what they discovered was the exact opposite. They learned that the prefrontal cortex actually slows down in intimate groups. It gets quieter when we're with people that we love, close people that we love. Our brains, I think this shows that our brains are wired to rely on family, to rely on friends, to rely on a spouse or a partner to help us to handle stress and to handle these really big emotions.
I think that's the sort of the essence when we talk about their social theory, right? And the essence of just co-regulation. So we're, as we mentioned before, we're always scanning. Mm-hmm. We're always scanning for safety. Sort of mm-hmm. like your phone's always looking for a Wi-Fi signal.
Yeah.
Right. So it's always going. And then when we get in these intimate groups, your brain's like, oh, this is safe. And I don't have to make any of these hard decisions. I know that they're there and I can mm-hmm. offload that. I love that the brain got quieter.
Yes.
Sort of reminds me of that study that they'd done with married women.
Oh, I love that.
On the functional MRI. So they took married women.
Yes.
And they said, I don't know that they ever gave them a shock, but they said they were going to.
They said that we're going to, they wanted to get them scared to kind of light up the fear center in the brain. Yeah. And so they told them, you're going to get a mild shock.
A mild shock. And like, what does that mean? Like one person's mm-hmm. mild is another person's I'm screaming, right? And so they had just basically, they wanted to induce stress. And so the functional MRI shows when centers of the brain are active.
And which parts are related to fear and stress.
So they put the women in three different test scenarios. One, they had them holding their husband's hand. Mm-hmm. The second one, they had them holding a stranger's hand. And then the third scenario, they weren't holding anybody's hand.
Mm.
And so, and each time, and they would do this test, you're going to get a mild shock, and they would run the functional MRI. Mm-hmm. And they showed that the one where they were not holding anybody's hand showed the most brain stress or the most activity on the functional MRI.
Right.
Holding a stranger's hand, of course, helped a little bit, but holding their husband's hand calmed the brain the most, created the least amount of sort of load or work on the functional MRI.
Right. Yeah. And I think that right there just shows how important connection is, how our brain is wired to expect. I love that word again.
Expect
support and co-regulation from a significant other.
Yeah, absolutely.
So again, this happens in real life. And so I want to come back to what I teased a little bit earlier, which is this thing,
the story
from this week. So
I love this story.
I want to share a quick story about a couple that I've been working with. And I've been working with them for the last maybe 3 months, and they're doing really great. We're almost done with our sessions. This was just a quick check-in call to see how they were doing. And so I was asking them questions about how they were managing the day-to-day stressors and conflicts conflict doesn't go away.
Absolutely.
Everyone continues to have conflict. Even if you work with me, you're still going to have conflict no matter who you are. Even we have conflict.
We have conflict, right?
So I just want to check in with them, see if they're using the skills or if they were creeping back into those old habits. And so the husband shared this beautiful story about co-regulation. And he was telling me that they had this day where it seemed like one of those days where everything goes wrong. The car broke down. There was an issue at the house. I don't know, number of different things. Another problem hits. And then he notices his wife's getting a little bit stressed out, window of tolerance shrinking, I'm sure. And she gets a little bit sharp. And in the past, before I started working with him, that would have thrown him totally off. He would have been completely dysregulated by her getting sharp. He would have taken it personally. He would have withdrawn, pulled away. But this time he stayed calm and he stayed curious. And he told me, essentially, he said, I was so proud of myself. I didn't shut down. I stayed open. I helped her stay in it with me and to stay calm. I helped her through it. And you know what? It was so interesting because she calmed down so fast. It was so different than how things were in the past. And the minute she calmed down, she immediately apologized, said, I shouldn't have said that to you. I'm really sorry, and apologized and made a repair. And they just got through it so quickly.
I love that story. Yeah. I love that story because it shows just how in that moment he was her anchor.
Yeah.
Like he kept her from just sort of spinning out, right? Yes. And he held her firm and calm during the stress. And because he did, she was able to sort of return to baseline. She found where it was.
Yeah.
Instead of both of them minus their anchor, just spinning away, he was able to stay in place.
Right.
Right. And he co-regulated her nervous system. So her brain offloaded some of that work to him. She borrowed some of his calm. I sort of like that. I wanted to say, like, can you borrow some Zen?
Yeah.
Like, hey, can I have a cup of sugar? Like, hey, can I have some Zen today? Can I borrow your Zen to try and calm me down so that my wise prefrontal cortex can then come back online?
So I think is so fascinating about this story is that in the past, her dysregulation would have created more dysregulation for him, which would have caused more dysregulation for her, and they would have been in this spiral.
Yeah.
But because he was able to stay firm and solid and be that anchor, she was able to go, oh, okay, let me just borrow a little bit of that from you. Let me co-regulate to that and borrow some of that.
Zen.
And then I'm right back in it.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was such a great story that inspired today's.
Yeah, I love that.
Today's topic. And I thought it was really, really fascinating. So let's do a wrap.
All right. So I want to wrap up with a couple final thoughts. And we've explored how we're wired for connection, mm-hmm. how our brains are social organs, and how they depend on co-regulation. Science shows that we're built to share emotions and to lean on each other and borrow Zen from each other.
Yes. Yes. So here's the thing that also I want you to think about. Our closest relationship, like our marriage, it really can be that anchor. It can save us from a lot of pain and loneliness, just like with the solitary confinement prisoners, can save us from that disconnection, that loneliness. It can keep us grounded like it did with that couple that we just shared. Rich connections bring calm and bring ease, but that's kind of the rub, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rich connections.
It has to be the rich connections, right? Not healthy this connection. Antagonistic or irritating connection, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's the paradox. Nothing can trigger us. Oh my goodness. Nothing can trigger us like our intimate partner. Love learns how to push every button that is wired into us, yeah. and it opens our old wounds and our brains, you know, are then intertwined for better or worse.
That's like, exactly why it's so important to prioritize your marriage.
Yeah.
Making sure that you create this secure, healthy relationship. It's not something that's just a nicey thing to have. It's essential. It's essential to have this long, healthy, fulfilling life. So take a moment and think about your relationship. How can you be an anchor for your partner? How can you together co-regulate through tough moments? And if something is standing in your way right now, if there's repair that needs to be made, so that you can get back into sync, think about how you can repair whatever is going on in your relationship right now so that you can return to that, so you can go back to where you could depend on each other.
Absolutely.
And co-regulate each other.
Yeah. Well, if this episode hit home for you, we'd love to hear from you. Come over and find us on Instagram at Master Your Marriage. And if you found this episode helpful, please leave us a 5-star review and share it with someone who might need it. If you have any ideas for future topics or ways that we can make the show better, please drop us a note at masteryourmarriage@gmail.com.
This week, be kind to each other, put each other first. Remember, it's the small things done often that make the greatest impact.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Marriage. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, then we want to hear from you. just go to MasterYourMarriagePodcast.com and send us your question.
Oh, and while you're there, you can also check out our retreats and events and even apply for coaching.
And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you get advanced notice of when the next episode drops, plus show notes and many extras. Thanks again for tuning in.